Hi, I'm Tanya Thompson, creator of Nightlight, the Black Horror Podcast. Today's episode is a story previously published in Black Magic Women, Terrifying Tales by Scary Sisters, a collection of horror written by Black women that is a recommended read for the Horror Writers of America Stoker Awards. Sweet Justice won my heart as soon as I read it. With elements of old-school noir and the supernatural, it's right up my alley, and I think you'll like it too. The author, Kenesha Williams, is also a screenwriter, speaker, and founder and editor-in-chief of Black Girl Magic Lit magazine. She has been a panelist and speaker at StokerCon, BossCon, the East Coast Black Age of Comics Convention, the 2017 African Americans Expo, and the Black Speculative Arts Movement Convention. Her short screenplay, Wild, is an official selection of the 2018 Women in Horror Film Festival, and she is in the process of finalizing her first horror novel. You can follow her on Amazon to learn more about her writing. This episode was brought to you by Ryan, who donated to the podcast via PayPal. Thanks, Ryan. We couldn't do this without you. Today's episode is narrated by Sheree Stewart and contains mentions of sexual assault, so if you prefer to avoid that, skip this week's episode. There will be another one for you next week. And now, Sweet Justice by Kenesha Williams.
How does that song go? By that skinny blonde girl that writes all those bad boyfriend songs. Oh yeah, I knew you were trouble when you walked in. That's the thought that entered my mind as soon as Detective Nelson walked into my office. Actually, it was a garage I turned into an office, but damn it, you get the point. I wasn't really surprised when he walked into my office. I knew sooner or later the police department would get their heads out of their ass and come inquiring about my assistance with their latest spate of murders. I should have known they wouldn't come kowtowing until they absolutely had to, though. Especially since the last time we worked together, I thoroughly showed them up after they made countless excuses as to why they couldn't get results. But I knew they'd come knocking eventually, and I should have known they'd use one of my biggest weaknesses against me. Detective Nelson. Nelson had the swagger of Idris, the face of Morris, and the body of... well, the body of Morris Chestnut, too. He was 6'3" of delicious, dangerous, and dirty manhood. The last time I saw him was when I threw my mom's favorite vase at his head as he was buck naked out of my shower. Luckily, it wasn't my favorite vase because that bad boy cracked into at least a million tiny pieces. Unfortunately, it narrowly missed connecting to Detective Adam Nelson's handsome blockhead. He knew how I felt about commitment, and his fool ass asked me for the key to my house. He was lucky I gave him time to get dressed before I threw him out. Understandably, he hadn't come by since then. But now, here he was, looking just as fine as he did the morning he narrowly escaped a busted head. He came in hat in hand, inquiring about my help. The body count had been adding up for at least 6 months. The deaths had been swept under the rug until the assistant DA became one of those bodies. First, pimps started disappearing. And when they reappeared, it was as gnarled and dried corpses in back alleys that no one should have been down anyway. No one knew what to make of the disappearances and subsequent reappearance of almost mummified bodies. And no one really cared. Good riddance was the attitude. Then, the Johns started to disappear. There were a few frantic 911 calls from housewives looking for their husbands, but still, little fanfare. To be honest, some of the wives didn't want the husbands found. It seemed like once the detectives started looking hard at the victims, they found that those who were missing were abusive bastards and major assholes, and therefore had many known enemies. In fact, it turned out a lot of them had more enemies than friends, and if you asked anyone who knew the ADA, they'd count him in with the bastards and the assholes. But he was the ADA, and therefore important people were looking for justice, or at the very least, a miscreant to pin the charges on. When they couldn't find a single shred of evidence and someone on the force with sense enough to look at the clues they did have, shriveled body, no mortal wounds, unspecified cause of death, they called upon me and my unique gifts. In plain terms, I was a supernatural private investigator. My business card, however, just had my name, Myesha Starr, P.I. I know, it sounds like a porn star's name, but it was the one my mother and father gave me. I kept the supernatural part to myself, or to those who were on a, need-to-know basis. Still, even without spelling out the unique part of my talents, word of mouth always kept me with a steady supply of clients and my mortgage paid on time. Speaking of mortgages, although I wasn't happy that some weird magical killer was on the loose, it was getting close to bill time, and my last client flaked on my payment. Actually, I killed him, and like they say, dead men tell no tales, but they also pay no invoices. If we're being technical, I didn't kill the client, because you can't kill something that's already dead. I guess if we're being spot on, I re-killed the client who was trying to lure me to my death. I'm sure there's still a price on my head since he failed miserably to carry out his orders, but such is the life of a supernatural PI. "Don't just stand there looking stupid, sit down," I said, and waved at the two guest chairs that sat in front of my mid-century modern wood desk. He did what he was told and continued to look everywhere but into my eyes. He took in a big gulp of air as if he needed more wind in his sails to spit out whatever it was he had to say before we got down to business. I braced myself for the barrage of words, but was surprised when all he said was, "I'm sorry." I leaned forward on my desk, wondering if I was imagining the words. "Excuse me?
I'm sorry, you told me how you felt about rushing into a commitment and then my stupid behind goes and asks for just that, and for that I'm sorry."
He said it all in one breath, like if he didn't say it all at once, he wouldn't be able to say it at all. I sat back in my chair, speechless, for once in my life. It took a lot of cojones to admit you made a mistake, and I was honestly surprised by the apology. "I'm sorry, too. I should have talked to you about it instead of trying to inflict bodily harm." I smiled, and then laughed at the joke. Luckily, he laughed, too, and all the weird energy in the room dissipated.
"All right, now that that's out of the way, what took y'all so long to contact me? Shouldn't take a big muckety-muck's death for the law to be seeking justice, right? All lives matter, huh?"
I asked, disdain dripping from each word. Seems like as long as certain folks are victims, the police felt like maybe somebody was doing their work for them. But now that the chickens had come home to roost, they wanted my help.
"You know I don't feel that way, Maisha," he said as he looked me in my eyes.
I crossed my arms in front of me. Sure, I knew he didn't feel that way, but his brothers in blue were a different story. I was going to help out, of course. I was afraid that whoever was doing this was going to start attacking the working girls next, and I knew they'd get no kind of justice from the police.
"I know," I said. "So what do you think's going on?" I asked. Although Adam didn't have the gift like I did, he had a pretty strong intuition that served him well on the force. "It seems like someone's getting revenge, if you ask me. All these creeps dying."
He leaned closer as if we weren't the only two in the room.
"Between you and me, I heard ADA Johansson sometimes let crimes go unnoticed if a pro gave him a little lovin' on the side. Also heard he liked to play rough. Too rough. And sometimes would push the boundaries of consent."
"Huh. So he was a rapist, is that what you're telling me?" I shook my head in anger. "That bastard. He deserved what he got."
"I'm not arguing with you. I just need to get this person off the streets. Who knows who they'll take next?"
I leaned as far back in my chair as I could without falling. I knew that Adam wasn't like the ADA or those dirty cops in California who'd been passing a teenage prostitute back and forth for years. But seeing what he represented vexed my spirit in ways he just didn't know. I was happy that I knew for myself that there was at least one good cop on the force. Still didn't make me feel any better knowing how many bad ones there were. I thought maybe I could beg off on this case and wait for whoever was doing the killings to knock off a few more assholes. That wouldn't be fair. Assholedom shouldn't be an automatic death sentence.
"So, will you help me?"
he asked, giving me the puppy dog eyes all the while. "Of course," I said, "but you owe me something."
I woke up with a start, feeling like I couldn't breathe. I was trapped under something large and immovable, and I began to panic. Then I heard a loud noise that could only be the sound of Adam's insufferable snoring. Realizing he'd thrown his tree branch-like arm across my chest in the middle of the night, and that's why I could barely move or breathe, calmed me down. I threw off his arm and slid out of bed. It was still early, and the alarm clock on my dresser glowed the time of 3 a.m. in fluorescent green. Seeing the clock's lights reminded me of something I noticed in one of the pictures Adam had shown me last night. At one of the crime scenes, there was a bright fluorescent orange hoop earring that reminded me of something that Lisa Turtle might have worn on Saved by the Bell near the body. It was far enough away that the police didn't think anything of it, but something about it caught my attention. Had the idiots thought to bag it, I might have been able to use it to scry. I walked to the bathroom and grabbed my fluffy white robe off the back of the door and looked in the mirror. My hair was flying all over the place because I hadn't even had time to grab my hair turban before Adam grabbed me and placed soft kisses all over my throat after I agreed to work on the case. He went straight for my weak spot, so I went straight for his. And after that, there was nothing but the shouting left. I hadn't had a romp like that since I kicked him out of my house, so I wasn't complaining about the hair. I looked around the bathroom, trying to remember where my turban would be, and I remembered that I had placed it in the small shelf above the lavatory. I grabbed my turban, and something fell as if it were placed on top of it. I bent down to look and see what had fallen, grateful that both the seat and the lid were closed, or it would have definitely been in the bowl. I reached behind the commode base and closed my hand around something small and circular. When I brought the item to my face, I knew what it would be, but I looked anyway. The bright, fluorescent, orange hoop earring lay in my palm. I instinctively looked around the bathroom as if someone might pop out at any moment, but no one did. I padded back to the bedroom and shook Adam awake. He lazily opened his eyes and grinned with a line of dry drool across his cheek, no doubt thinking I was waking him for round two. "No, it's not that," I said before he got any ideas. He frowned, but sat up in the bed awaiting my next words. Seems like the killer might have left us a clue. The air in the alley smelled like squalor and death. Even the antiseptic properties of the sun couldn't erase the putrescence. I thought coming back to the scene of the crime in the day would make the whole thing less grimy, but it had the opposite effect. Women who looked pretty under streetlights in the dark looked decidedly less so in the harsh rays of the sun's light. They looked like what they were. Downtrodden women who needed a chance to make it in this world, by hook or by crook. Not that I could blame them one bit. And one of them was making her way through the men in blue on the beat one by one. "Hey, miss," I shouted to the youngest looking girl out here. She had her hair dyed an unnatural shade of red and wore a skirt in the same color hitched up to her hoo-ha. She looked young enough to be my daughter if I were able to have one. I could tell she wasn't even 19 under all the war paint she put on. But I understood the need to look fierce when facing an even fiercer opponent. "Like, yeah?" she said, swaying towards me on spindly high heels. In another life, she could have been a runway model. In this one, she was some unkind man's cum receptacle. Life was funny like that. She was now so close to me that I could see the color of her eyes. They were a light hazel that was striking against her ebony face. Her lips were full, and she'd turned them up in a way that said, "I've seen it all before." But her eyes told another story. I don't know how long she'd been out here, but whatever she had seen spooked her. Just not enough for her to give up the corner. She didn't look like a junkie, so I was thinking runaway. "You see a girl who wears jewelry like this?" I asked, holding up the orange hoop I'd found this morning. The girl held out her palm, and I dropped the earring in her hand. My attempts at scrying with it back at the house had produced nothing. It was odd. Seemed like someone wanted me to find them, but they weren't giving me enough clues. She looked at the earring and then held it back out to me between her thumb and pointer finger. I noticed her chipped manicure, which told me she still tried to keep herself up. "Nah, I don't know anyone who wears stuff like that. Looks old." "Yeah, it does," I said mostly to myself. "If you see something, can you give me a call?" I held out my card to her and she pinched it between the same two fingers. I saw her eyes squinch up to read it and could make out her lips moving as she read. Maisha Star PI. What does that mean? Means I investigate stuff the others can't.
Yeah, like what, ghosts and stuff?
And stuff, I answered back. My grandma could see stuff like that, she tossed out, and then closed her mouth tight like she'd said too much. Your grandma still with us? I asked as nonchalantly as I could. The girl ducked her head down and looked at the toes of her shoes as if they held life's mysteries. Nah, she's been long gone. I was 10 when she died. And your parents? I knew I was being nosy and I was waiting for her to tell me to mind my own damn business, but I needed to know.
I don't know. Mama left me with her mama and I never knew who my daddy was. Don't think my mama knew either.
She looked around to see if anyone else had heard what she said. The streets were pretty empty, it being so early. Just her, me, some other working girls either leaving to go back home or on their way to set up shop. It's pretty early. Not too many customers this early. You want to come with me and get some breakfast? It was a hunch that I needed to follow up on. If her gran had the sight, maybe she did too. And hell, if I was being honest, there was something about the girl that I liked, that I wanted to protect. Before she could answer, a black car pulled up to the curb behind her.
Baby doll!
A man's voice called out from the car. I watched as the girl's face crumpled while she faced me. Then she whipped her head around and I could hear the smile in her voice as she said,
"Hey, baby!"
She had turned from schoolgirl to coquette in a matter of seconds. But the look on her face before she turned told me the man in the car was nothing but trouble. Trouble she knew, but trouble which she needed. I walked over to the car where she was now leaning halfway into and cleared my throat. She was so deep in her negotiation, she jumped a little. "So about that breakfast?" I said, throwing my arm over her shoulder, all the while peering into the car. There were two men in the car. The man at the wheel had a pockmarked face the color of left-out mayonnaise, and the man in the passenger seat next to him wasn't winning any beauty contests either. The third man in the back scooted further into the seat as to remain hidden. She gently shrugged my arm off her and turned to face me with pleading eyes. I didn't know whether she wanted me to save her or if she wanted me to let her go with the men. But until she told me to shove off, I was going to be sticking right by her side.
"I'm good,"
she said through teeth clamped down so tight the words sounded like the hissing of a snake. I took the hint and backed up a bit. Watching her get into the back seat with the man I couldn't see made my body buzz like an electric current. I got nothing but bad vibes and I couldn't do a damn thing about it. I watched helplessly as the car drove off, but committed the license plate to memory. If baby doll didn't come back by tomorrow morning, I was having Adam look up the plates and find out who it was registered to. It's a shame. I didn't have to wait until the next morning to find baby doll, because the 11 o'clock news had her face plastered on it. Young woman, age 17, found dead in same alley as district attorney. Those were the words on the bottom of the television screen. I was in so much shock that I couldn't even make out the words the reporter was saying. I watched the scene unfold on television. They showed the alley I'd just been to earlier in the day, and on the ground was a white sheet covering what I could only assume was her body. Hot tears slid down my face and I used my balled up fist to wipe my eyes. If the person who killed the cops killed baby doll, they were gonna have to personally deal with me. I know it was cliche, but this time, it was personal. I walked like a zombie to my closet and pulled out a pair of shorts that I wore with tights last Halloween dressed as a Soul Train dancer. I carefully made up my face, spritzed on some rose water perfume, and strapped a sheathed knife to my upper thigh. Mama was going hunting tonight. The cops had now left the murder scene and all that remained was the yellow police tape. It still didn't stop the Johns and the ladies from doing their business. I craned my neck towards the alley, seeing if I could get a glimpse of baby doll's spirit. But I didn't see a thing. Seemed like maybe she wanted to move on. I was happy her soul was at rest, but I selfishly wanted to see her one last time. When I turned back towards the street, my eyes fell on a woman about half a foot taller than me, as well as a whole 2 feet wider. She looked me up and down and then sneered as if what she saw was lacking. "You knew?" She spat at me. I didn't know whether it was a question or a statement, so I just nodded.
"Yeah, you look like it."
You smell too clean and you look too eager. Ain't gonna be nobody but the desperate and the depraved out tonight. The cops and reporters spooked all the regular guys away. Watch out for yourself. Before I could come up with a response, she swaggered away and melted into the scenery. I took my hands to my hair and pulled it in different directions, giving myself a roughed up look. I didn't want to look like I was an easy mark. I sauntered up and down the street a bit, hoping I wouldn't make any enemies by taking some of the regular girls' customers. It didn't take long for what I wanted to show up. Criminals are dumb. They always return to the scene of the crime. I don't know why they do. Mainly for bragging rights, I guess, but it was a damn risky thing to do. The black car from this morning circled the block. Just when I thought it had disappeared, I saw it round the corner again. I stepped out from the shadows and made myself seen. I was hoping that Pockface had a need for another girl. Hopefully they didn't just have a taste for young flesh. I was pushing 40, but on a good day I could pass for 29. My legs were good, my ass was round, and my tits hadn't succumbed to gravity. The car stopped in front of me and the window rolled down. You looking for some fun? I sang out to Pockface. He looked me up and down like a slave on the auction block, and I held in a shudder as he appraised me from head to toe. Yeah, sure am, he said. I leaned into the open window and saw that his partner that rode shotgun was missing, but the man in the back was there. Sure am, I repeated. I grabbed the door handle, but before I could open it, a hand touched mine. The hand was cold, dead cold. I turned to see a woman behind me. She was about my height, with a mahogany complexion, and her hair was in a roller-set shag reminiscent of Claire from The Cosby Show. In her ear, the other orange hoop. I'll take it from here, sugar, she said in a southern drawl that I couldn't place. She could have been from anywhere south of the Mason-Dixon line. Can we talk? I asked.
Yeah, y'all fight over who gets to come with us, the driver called out.
She blew him a kiss and then took my elbow in her hand and guided me closer to the alley.
You don't want none of that, sugar. They into that kinky shit and they don't believe in safe words, she said in a low voice.
I think they killed my friend, I said as I ran my hands up and down my bare arms that were now shivering in the frigid air. Which is why you need to let me go with them and you stay here. She kept the car in her eyesight and I looked over at where it idled. Your earring? I asked. You got the other one, right? She countered. Ghost? She chuckled, and the breath she expelled was icier than the night air. Something like that, she said with a grin. Let's just say I'm a worker of justice. Much like you, Maisha. You go on home. I take care of everything. I wanted to protest, but I knew that she could give these bastards a better home going than I could with my knife. Plus, it'd be 2-on-1. Not exactly a fair fight for me, but a spirit. Well now, that would even up the odds a bit. Make it hurt, I said as I walked away. Oh, I will, I heard her say in the distance. Mayor found slain in Upper Northwest home. Body of missing woman, Justice Hawkins, missing since 1987, found in basement. This time, I watched the Chiron on the screen and smiled. The picture of the missing woman was the spitting image of the woman I'd met the night before with the icy breath and the southern drawl. She wore a smile as big as the sun and as bright as the highlighter orange hoops in her ears. Hot damn! I exclaimed, waking up my cat at the foot of the bed, as well as Adam, who was sound asleep on my right side. What happened? He asked as he sprang up from his pillow. Justice happened, I said as I laid my head on his chest. I used the remote to turn off the news and then threw it off the side of the bed. Sweet justice.
Today's episode was produced by Jen Zink of the Skiffy and Fancy podcast. Thanks to Jen and our newest imps, our patrons, Christina and Kevin. Because of you, this podcast won't die, like poor baby doll in our story today. Thanks for keeping us alive. You too can keep us from dying a slow, painful death by becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/nightlightpod to become a member. Halloween is coming, and we've got some tricks and some treats in store for members of the Nightlight Legion. You can join for as little as $1 per month. If Patreon isn't your jam, you can do what Ryan did and make a one-time donation to the podcast via PayPal. Go to paypal.me/nightlightpodcast to help us pay Black Horror writers. Every dollar helps, and we appreciate every single one of our members and donors. But if you aren't able to support us financially, sharing and reviewing the podcast is immensely helpful in attracting advertisers and sponsors. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week with another story.